Welcome to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. Get ready to embrace the fearless mindset and revolutionize your dentistry practice. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. Today, I'm really pleased to have as my guest, Dr. Saria Sabi, and she is from St. Louis, Missouri. I listened to her on a podcast, Women in the Arena, and I was on a walk listening to that podcast, and I immediately, within 1 to 2 minutes, thought, I have to have you, Saria, on my podcast. I loved your energy. I loved your message. I loved everything about the podcast and who you are. Your energy, enthusiasm, and the way you approach things is what I'm about. And so I just instantly connected and just thought, you know, we've got to do this. So I reached out to you, you connected and said, absolutely, you'd love to do it. So here we are together. Saria, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and share with the audience what you want them to know about you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me, John. Yeah, I'm excited to be here because I love what you're doing. You're trying to mentor and help others and put great stuff out there. And I love being a part of that. So thank you for asking me. I am a doctor of physical therapy and a coach, speaker, consultant. And my background is in acrobatics and ultramarathoning, barefoot running and water ultramarathons.
Interesting. I did some research on you, I will admit, after I listened to you with the women on the arena, in the arena, and I saw where you actually do run barefoot. Now, part of your deal is you're a minimalist, and we'll let you explain that to the audience here in a minute, but that's getting kind of the ultimate in minimalization, because I saw your bare feet on a very coarse, rocky surface. And I'm going, whoa, this woman, she's tough.
Well, yeah. So I am an expert in minimalism. That is really the core of everything that I do and teach. And so that honestly, the shift to barefoot running was where everything shifted for me in my life and where my whole minimalism journey started. Everything changed at that point. So yeah, I do run completely barefoot. I will put some protection on if I'm doing a surface like a trail that's super, super rocky roots. I like to do a lot of technical trails, but for the most part, I prefer to be barefoot completely. So yeah, I do that. And my girls are doing it now as well. I have two little girls and they are on the train as well.
Share with me how doing minimalization and barefoot, share with me how that came about, because you're very dedicated to that and I admire that greatly. But share with me a little bit more in depth about how that came about.
So I grew up just, I'm sure, you know, your audience is a lot of dentists and people like that who are by nature going to be high achievers, right? I mean, dental school and running a dental practice, that's high. That's high achievement. That's high stakes. It's difficult. So I think a lot of people will understand where I'm coming from when I say I grew up just trying to be the best at everything. I took on every challenge I could possibly find. And I really tried to put this projection, this image out to the world that I am just amazing and I can do no wrong and I've got it all together. So, you know, I was a straight A student. By the time I was 19, I was a world team power tumbler and lots of other things. And that was the image I put out. And I was drowning. People didn't know. I hid it very closely. I was completely overwhelmed. I barely slept. I had suicidal thoughts. I actually had plans. I don't know if that goes farther, but I had suicidal plans. And I had severely disordered eating. I was a disaster on one end and an incredible achiever on the other end. And then in college, I went to PT school and I was peer pressured into distance running, which I just, of course, knew I'd be horrible at because I'm a power athlete. I'm only 4'10" and I am just a power athlete. That's it. So I knew I'd be horrible, and I was right. So I was just everything that you could imagine about a distance runner. You know, when you're out there and you're running, and that person comes next to you, and you are just worried for their safety because they're wheezing and they're loud, and you think they're just going to keel over any second. You just want to say, "Hun, just go sit down on the curb, rest a little bit." That was me. That was me. But I also like to take on any challenge I can find and do it the best I could. So I just pushed through, and I was like, I'm going to be good at this, even though I know I can't be good at this. Everybody's told me I can't be good at it. And everybody's told me running is bad for you and it's bad on your knees. And my knees were, I had so much pain. I had plantar fasciitis, I had horrible knee pain, I had all these things going on. And over the course of 5 years doing everything quote unquote right, I got worse. I only got worse. All that effort, all that time, it was so stressful and I was so painful. And it got to the point where I was so frustrated, I thought nothing I'm doing is working. So I need to burn it all down and start over. It just didn't make any sense to me that something that we are born to do, we are born to run, everyone is.
Yeah, yeah.
80% of runners are injured every year, 80%. And that is higher than gymnastics, football, all these insane sports. We can't hamster around the block without being injured. It makes zero sense. It wasn't until I'd seen that stat. I knew that stat, but it never occurred to me to question it until that point, which I think is fascinating. I think speaks a lot to the way a lot of us approach life. We just do because it's what we've been taught. It's what we've heard. And we never question. Well, I questioned for the first time ever. And I didn't do anything. I didn't do any of my special diet or stretches or anything. I took off my shoes and I got on the treadmill and I ran. And it was the first time in 5 years that I had no pain. So 5 years of doing everything perfectly according by the book, the research and everything, the shoe stores, the specialists, everything. And I was a physical therapist at the time too. I only got worse. When I burned it all down and I just pulled back to basics, just absolute basic, let my body do what it could do, it changed everything. So after 5 years of getting worse, within a year of taking off my shoes, I went upstairs and I threw my shoes across the room after I was so mad at them. within a couple of months, I actually did my first trail half marathon and I came in second. In my division, which is insane.
Good for you.
And then within a year, I was running barefoot ultra marathons and I had started my own running clinic and Harvard recruited me to come up there. I was recruited to come up to Harvard to start the Spalding National Running Center with them because of the work that I was doing. Just that one, just the complete simplification changed everything. It was the only way. And for the first time ever, it was just getting rid of all the layers of complexity. I wasn't stressed.
I love that. Getting rid of the complexity. That's one thing that I've talked about, Saria, is simplification and making things as simple as possible for people. We try to, and we do. We do a fantastic job of making things way, way, way too complex. Maybe that makes us feel good, like maybe we're an expert or we're the world's leader in this particular category, the more complex we can make it. But really, a lot of things come down to some very simplistic, very simple formulas. I'm really curious, what made you kick off your shoes that first time going onto the treadmill? Was it just utter exhaustion and frustration with where things were at and you just, crap, I'm taking my shoes off and I'm just going to run?
So this is a funny story. So again, I'm a PT and I'm going to say there's a bit of snobbery in general in PT. You may know this may exist in dentistry as well. I don't know. But we tend to look at other professions and say, oh, well, they don't know this. You know, personal trainers or different people or lay people. Knees over toes guy. I love him. I love him to death. And I have so many PT friends who are like, oh, he's not a therapist and he doesn't know. I'm like, look at the results this guy gets. Why would you care where he came from? I'm looking at his outcomes and I'm like, yes, please teach me. I don't care what you have as a degree or anything else. So the story is I actually hated running at that time because it hated me and I hated it back, but I wasn't going to let it go. It was a toxic relationship. It really was. So my husband and I were going to go snowboarding, and we live in Missouri. We were driving to Colorado, and he was like, well, I'm going to download a couple audiobooks. I'm like, sure, whatever. And he was like, oh, here's one on running. I'm like, great. Well, I'll sleep through that. So we're driving along, and the book was called Born to Run. It's by Christopher McDougall. It's incredible. Anyone who hasn't run it, it's amazing. It is life-altering. It really is. So I'm trying to sleep and I can't. And I end up accidentally hearing this book. And the things he's saying is just so simple. Just basic, basic, basic. And here I am. I could quote you the literature on running shoes and all the different things. They didn't have any of that. He actually went through, Christopher McDougall, the author, went to see someone that I later worked with. And this person had told him, running's bad for you. It's hard on your knees and it's going to hurt.
Sure.
So he went on to other people and ended up in the Copper Canyons and running with the Tarahumara ultra marathons. So he went to the best of the best of the best, who basically told him the wrong thing. They told him the wrong thing with the best of intentions, just out of ignorance. It was what I had done leading up to this paradigm shift with my patients, unfortunately. I told them the wrong thing out of pure ignorance, and it wasn't for lack of trying. I knew what I was supposed to know. I didn't know the right things, though. So when we came home from that trip, I couldn't wait to try this. I could not wait. And yeah, he actually came to the opening, the grand opening of the Spalding National Running Center, Christopher McDougall did. And I was just, I had to hold myself back. I'm like, you changed my life, buddy. I kind of want to jump and hug you, and you don't know me, and that I don't want to frighten you. So
that's interesting. It's when we're faced with information that we know can be life-changing, but not knowing exactly to what degree, often we're afraid, very afraid, to advance and take that knowledge and run with it. But, you know, that's learning and growing. In one of your posts on LinkedIn, you talked about learning. And you can't wait to get together with people that want to learn with you and like you. And that's the way I am, and that's the way I am with this podcast. So much changes within us personally when we make ourselves vulnerable for growth and learning. And it just, what you've done and the direction you've gone with this has just done amazing things for you.
It really has. And, you know, my faith is very important to me, and that has grown along with this. And I am so thankful kind of for the gift of openness. I am happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong anytime. I just want to know. I'm not at all afraid to be wrong. I do deeply regret the people that I did not help, who came to me for help before I knew better. I can't do anything about that, but man, every person I've helped since then, it's just because I don't want anybody else to go through what I went through. And it's so preventable. It's so easy. The truth is always simple. That's what, you know, we talked about the layers of complexity. The truth is always simple. Now, it's not always easy, but it is always simple.
That's a great statement, because it is. The truth is the truth, and it's very simple, and it's very easy to latch on to. From my notes, from when you were in the arena, one of the first things I wrote down was, is this the path I should be on? Pose a question. Share with me about that statement, that question, Saria.
Be a little more specific for me. What do you mean?
Someone, either one of you, I don't remember whether it was Audrey or you, said, and I think it may have been you, that sometimes we need to pause, and we have that here. You quoted Mark Twain saying, pause and correct. Am I on the right path as to where I should be going? Elaborate.
So this kind of comes back to that thought process we were talking about earlier, where I had gone through PT school and I soaked up like a sponge. You know, I'm a high achiever. I want to impress my teachers. I'm just going to soak in what they say. I'm going to memorize it, regurgitate it, make them happy, make them love me, and, you know, do all the right things. I never once questioned it. These are the experts put in front of me. They're my teachers, and they are very smart. I have the highest regard for them. I had some amazing teachers. They were wrong, but I didn't question it. The things that we grow up with, the things that are around us, we all have an amount of fundamental bias, right? So things that, and some of it serves us very well. Other things are completely in our way and we have no idea. We're not even aware they're there. So things that we grow up with, things that are, that were taught to us in our family culture, in our societal culture, marketing, things we saw on TV, our teachers, everything that we grew up with shaped us. So many of those things are what we call fundamental bias. We're not even aware they're there. And some of those things are complete roadblocks. And it's not until we know they're there that we can knock them down. So when you're wherever you're at, say me with running, was I where I was because that was the path I was supposed to be on? Or was that path chosen for me and I'm not even aware of it? So minimalism, what I teach is frequent, ruthless, and intentional editing in your life. So if you think about a paper or a project for work, which we've all done at some point, you know, you work and you edit that thing to death. I had a medical student at an event I was speaking at one time, and she was like, well, I can't do this and I can't do that because of this and that. And I said, she was like, oh, that's just too hard. We're actually talking about people editing at that point. She was people have a lot of problems with people editing, which I get. We're not sociopaths, so we like people. We want them to feel good. But I said, okay, you're writing your thesis, right? She was working on a thesis. I said, how many times have you picked that thesis apart? She's like, oh, too many to count. I'm going to pick it apart to the day I turn it in. And then I'm going to wish I had another week to pick it apart. I said, that's your thesis. And that is really important. But this is your life we're talking about. This is your masterpiece. You need to edit that far more ruthlessly than you would anything else. So if you think about pulling up the things in your life, and there are strategies that I teach for this, to literally look at the areas of your life and the things that are in them, and then say, okay, I have this belief about that. This I know is serving me. It's fantastic. I feel wonderful. This is great. This I'm doing, but when I actually think about why, I don't know why. And then you need to dive into that, explore that belief. Where did that come from? Is that me? Is it correct? Is it my path? And it may be something that came, that kind of snuck in the back door. You have no idea how it got there. And now it's dominating your life and completely in your way. Those are things we kind of need to ferret out and get rid of.
You bet. You know, with you going through professional school and myself going through professional school, you know, we were brought up, at least you and I were in our generations, to respect people that are older than us, listen to what they have to say. And we were told basically to believe in what we're being told by our supposed elders. We go through medical school, dental school, physical therapy school. We are supposed to believe what we're being taught by our professors just because of the fact. But I, like you, once I got out of dental school, I started realizing the things that I was taught were not necessarily true fundamentally. And I started questioning, which was very different for me because, as we just talked, in going through dental school, A leads to B, B leads to C, and everything is just very linear in our learning. And so fanning out and questioning and then researching and whatever was really not an accepted way of progressing. And I like what you were talking about as far as that respect, is that we formulate beliefs based upon what people tell us in the past, and their beliefs were formed upon what people told them in the past. But is it true? Just because it was said. And that throws us, Saria, into a degree of a comfort zone that we exist in. And with your conversation on Women in Arena, you made the comment that comfort zones
kill progress.
By golly. Tell them that again, Saria.
Comfort zones kill progress.
Bingo. And that's what this podcast is about, is I want people to feel like I am forcing them to that barrier, that fence, whatever you want to call your comfort zone barrier, and to look on the other side of that and to jump that barrier, even in the slightest amount, and start enjoying the magic that is out there. I know that you spoke about that in the Women in the Arena. Talk a little bit about that from your perspective and from your minimalist leadership mindset.
I think we are taught to be like everybody else, kind of in the same pool with everybody else, but to try to be better than everybody else at the same game. And it ends up kind of being a race to the bottom. If you think about it in terms of, okay, so say I am going to be a personal trainer and I'm going to have this service. Well, this other person has the same service. So I'm going to price myself a little lower and give my people a little more than this person so that people will come to me. Well, then they're going to undercut a little bit more to compete with me. And then I'm going to do it again. It's literally a race to the bottom. And that's kind of what we do. We're playing the same game. And what I hearken back to the Matrix. I love that movie. I watched it like 50 times and I know I'm still missing things. He says some rules can be bent, others can be broken. So one of the things that I want people to understand is first you understand the system. First you understand what it is you're dealing with, and then you figure out where you can break. So again, it's we're all playing the same game. I don't play the game with anybody else anymore, if that makes sense.
Yes,
I'm playing my own game.
Yes.
I'm playing my own game and the rules change all the time. Honestly, there aren't that many rules. It's extremely freeing. And what I've been able to accomplish beyond that, you know, I talked about the MR340 in Women in the Arena as well, which, you know, is the longest nonstop boat race in the world. And I've never been in a kayak before I signed up for this thing. And if it weren't for that minimalist mindset, I never would have made it happen. Because I did not have the time to train for it, I spent 4 hours in a kayak before I did this race. If I had gone about it the way everybody told me to go about it, these are people who know what they're talking about. They've done this race multiple times. You know, they're experts in it. People who teach kayak and all these things, and they're telling me you have to do it this way. You have to do it this way. And I'm kind of panicking. I'm like, I know I can't do it that way. I have a lifestyle that's not going to allow for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I completely did a 180 and I looked at what can I do? And is this going to be enough? Absolutely. It's going to be enough. And that's where my critical question comes from that I use with so many people. But that mindset is what allowed me to do that. To do that race and to complete it and to become one of only 35 women in the entire world who completed that race that year because of that mindset, because I wasn't playing their game. If I had, I probably would have done well in the race, maybe, but everything else in my life would have suffered. And I probably would have been so stressed out coming into that race, I would not have enjoyed it the way I did. It was life-changing. And I was so present in that experience, and I wouldn't have been had I gone about it somebody else's way.
What led you to the decision to do this?
To do the 340?
The 340, yeah.
I had been stalking this race actually for years. I saw an article about it and I was like, my gosh, it's just miles of just glass, glassy river, glassy water with these trees coming up to the sides. And it's not like I had grown up canoeing and you go and it's gravel bars and you pull over. This is just trees coming right out of the side. It is the most peaceful, pure, beautiful thing. And I was like, man, that would be amazing to do. And I had actually started stalking that race back when I was a really terrible runner.
Yeah.
Back when I was still in the overwhelm and all those things. And I, you know, can't do it. There's no way I can do it. But it still kind of was in the back of my head somewhere. And all this changed and an article popped up again, just out of nowhere. And I was in this very different place with all the minimalism journey. I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to sign up. We're just going to go and it's going to happen. And that's what I did. But it is, if you can imagine, it takes about a week. You get 4 days to complete the race. So, and it's consecutive. So you have to paddle at night. unless you're like crazy, crazy fast. And I was a solo and I wasn't crazy fast. So I paddled at night and it is 4 days of nothing. This is 2021. So we were still in the height of COVID and the politics and Black Lives Matter and all this turmoil going on in our country. Nobody was talking about any of that out there. It was the most bizarre thing. It was like, none of it mattered. None of it mattered. It is so quiet out there and it's just beautiful. And then you paddle at night. And so you have to have a light, a green light and a red light to differentiate where your bow and stern are. But they have to be very faint. Very faint because your night vision, and they actually schedule the race on the full moon because you need all that light to night paddle.
Right. Yeah.
But if you have a bright light, it messes with your night vision and paddlers will get after you hardcore. They'll kick you right off the river and it's not good. It's not good. So you have these very faint lights. And as you're going along the river, and everybody, there's a channel. So you want to stay in the channel. So wide, wide river. The channel is the deepest part. You want to stay in there. So everybody's following the same path. And the first night, people were really still together. So you have this just line of these beautiful lights on this peaceful, quiet river.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing that compares to it. I would have missed these things had I been stopped by somebody else's something, by somebody else's ideation and the running as well. If I were playing by somebody else's rules, if I were listening to somebody else, if I were scared to step out of my comfort zone, I would have missed so much.
That's pretty courageous, actually, to go on that race. I want to follow up a little bit about, you have a saying, will this help me beat the Reaper? I love that. I have goals set for myself, and I ask a little bit different question. Share with me where that question comes from and how you utilize it.
Yes, that was another life-changing thing. And again, when you're not so overwhelmed with everything, it helps you to see the things that you're in and really take a lot from the experiences that you have. You know, every conversation with different people, the things that you go through, you're able to really glean so much more. So that it was actually one of the things from the MR340. That was actually how I was able to do the race. That was my strategy. So I looked at everything that I was supposed to do and knew I couldn't do it all and just started editing. So this is one of the strategies that I love to use with people. And I call it the critical question tool. So I love to have people come up with their own critical question. If they don't have one, then they are welcome to use mine. I'm not territorial. Go for it. So there is a boat in the MR340. And it is a pacer boat. So its job is to move along the race. So there are time points. If the Reaper, and that's what the boat is called, it flies a skull and crossbones, and the crossbones are paddles. So it's pretty cool. It's a cool flag. But the Reaper's job is to go at the slowest rate possible to hit the time points in the minimal amount of time. So if the Reaper beats your boat to any time point, you are out of the race. It doesn't matter if you've been going for 3 days. If it beats you to any time point, you're out because they can't patrol the entire river. You have so much time to finish. And,
right.
And that's it. You know, so if you're not at that time point, then you're out of the race. So when I filed everything down, when I edited down, I came up with that critical question. All I needed to do to finish the race, because I wasn't trying to win, all I needed to do was to finish the race was to beat the Reaper. So that became my critical question. And I let that drive every single thing that I did in my life leading up to the race, literally everything. If I'm going to have this piece of pizza, will it help me beat the Reaper? If I do this workout, will it help me beat the Reaper? If I have this conversation with this person, will it help me beat the Reaper? And it's amazing when you focus everything in, if I stay up an extra hour, will it help me beat the Reaper? Just doing that focused everything in my mindset and everything. I was so focused on beating the Reaper. I did minimally what I needed to do. And I loved every second of it. So I let that question guide everything I do. So that was how I did the MR340. And that is kind of a question that's just stayed with me. And I will come up with other critical questions when I have different things coming up for me, but that's kind of my daily. If I find myself doing something, it pops into my head. Will this help me beat the Reaper? Because I always have a Reaper, right? We always have a Reaper. Everybody has Reapers. It can be anything. It can be a toxic relationship. It can be just that self-doubt that you have, or limiting beliefs that you have, the fear of stepping out of your comfort zone. It can be that you don't feel like getting up to work out that day. They're all Reapers. So is what you're doing going to help you beat the Reaper? That the Reaper is just anything that stands between you and your greatness.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned that word, greatness. I believe there's greatness in everybody. Literally every human being, every soul that is born onto the face of the earth. I believe that there is a nugget of greatness that lies within them. And they either ignore it, or they acknowledge it and kick it to the curb. They acknowledge it and run with it, or they look at it as a challenge to grow that to the maximum. And so that's one of the questions I pose to myself is that, okay, John, there is some greatness down in there someplace at your particular point in your life. Someday or another, surely you're going to really start looking at that and trying to grow it. And so my question is, John, is that taking you towards your greatness? And like you, it's like, okay, is watching 4 shows on streaming TV with Mary at night, is that moving towards my greatness? Well, not really, but darn, it feels really good doing that right now. But, you know, that's part of the challenge, I think, Suri, with everybody is, and particularly the audience that listens to the podcast and the people that you enjoy working with, is helping them realize and understand and appreciate and feel good about that potential for greatness within them. And sometimes they just need someone to look them in the eyes and say, hey, you know, you can do this. Here's what we can do, and we can work together, and I'm going to show you ways that I beat my Reaper, and I'm still working on my Reaper, because sometimes that Reaper cups up and doesn't only beat me, it beats me up. But this is how we can do it, and how I can work with you and helping you overcome that. I just, that beat the Reaper really caught me, and I appreciate that story. That's good. You know, mindset and mind space is critical for accomplishment, and I've talked about this on other episodes. Share with me from your perspective of being a leadership mindset coach. Share with us what your thoughts are here, Saria.
The mind is everything. If your mind isn't right, I don't care what else you're trying to do. I don't care what mechanics you're trying to put into place. It's not going to work. I work with a lot of elite everything, but you know, in coaching for 30 years, I've worked with a ton of elite athletes. And one of the things that gets me is the storytelling. So I had a girl, I put on a 3-day event and for acrobats. This was a couple of years ago. And I had this girl, just nothing but potential. My gosh, she's gorgeous. She's smart. She's got this build that's just, you know, she's muscular. She's great. She's got everything going for her, right? I watched her the first day, and I brought in amazing coaches to help me with this event. World champions, world-class champions, yeah, my roster was amazing. And I watched her in tears more than once on the first day. And I pulled her into the bathroom at one point and I said, "What's going on?" "He doesn't like me. He doesn't think I can do anything. He doesn't think I'm any good, you know, whatever." I know these coaches. I know them well. And when I wasn't coaching, I was floating, watching, you know, popping in here and there. These are stories that she had in her head. She hears correction as criticism. So she hears "get tight, straighten your legs" as "you're not good enough." That's the story she spun up in her head. That's a story that's not serving her. And I see that with everybody, including me, from time to time. We have to be really careful with the stories that we're telling ourselves. And that mindset, what are the stories that you're telling yourself? Am I a victim of something? Is something happening to me? And that's rarely the case. that something is actually happening to you that holds you down.
Correct.
So I worked with her. She came back the next morning, and I actually did a little teach with the athletes the next morning on storytelling. And I used her as an example. I did not point her out. I just said, you know, we all have this thing. She came up to me afterward and she goes, I cried last night and I'm so sorry. You know, I'm ready to work. She got so many skills after that, just because she was open to hearing what they had to say. Her story was different. Her story was not, I'm not good enough. I can't do it. They don't like me. Her story was, all right, they see that I can do this. I need to make this one correction and I'll be better. They're trying to help me be better. So it's the mindset around, it really is storytelling. I work with a lot of people on being better storytellers and going back and finding those stories that are holding us back. We have a lot of things like, you know, we all have issues with our parents, right? I have two little girls and I'm like, my mission in life is just to not mess them up any more than I have to. I know I have to somehow, but if they come back to me later and just say, Mom, you know, you didn't do too bad of a job, you know, then that'll be good. So, but I look back at my parents at some points and things that I had blamed them for a long time. And even changing that story around blame, if I'm going to blame them for this, then I have to blame them for everything, including all the amazing things that I got from them. And I was leaving those things out. I was looking at these things that weren't ideal, saying, how could you do that? Blah, blah, blah. But I have to blame them in entirety. And that changed the entire picture for me. So I don't know if that answers your questions, but I think storytelling is really important with mindset. But mindset is everything.
Well, I agree. I agree 100% with you on that, Saria. Storytelling is one thing that I really embraced in my dental practice. And when I did that, my practice became so much fun because I got to learn about people and I learned to understand where they were at that particular point in time coming into my practice. You know, my practice was a lifestyle where I did a lot of cosmetic dentistry, restorative dentistry on dental implants, Invisalign, that type of thing. Making the smiles beautiful for people. And the most common individual was someone who had come in and they had a mindset that they weren't worthy, that they were rapidly walking down the lane of I'm irrelevant, I'm becoming more and more irrelevant, I'm totally irrelevant, totally worthless. And these people came in and they had wounded hearts, souls, spirits. And it was a lot of fun for me. And all I did was tell me your story. Share with me why you're here. And then I would just shut up and listen. And within minutes, I knew exactly where to go with that patient. And it took a lot of courage on their part because someone would go, well, what do you mean, my story? Yeah, you're shaking your head. You know what I'm talking about.
I know
about.
Exactly what you're talking about. And I love that you did that.
Yeah, it, you know, just doing that simple thing. I don't know why I started asking that question and going in that direction, other than the fact when I made the transition, I knew that this was a different type of an individual that I was going to be seeing in my practice. And I needed to learn to communicate far more effectively. I needed to step out of my comfort zone. It was very scary for me to do that because I'm a PK, preacher's kid. And, you know, I had laws and rules and regulations pounded on me daily when I was a youngster. And one of them was, you know, you don't ask people personal questions. And, you know, if they share with you, fine. If they don't, you don't even go there. So I had to transition that particular mindset concept and go, you know, often people are begging, not verbally, but they're begging for someone to ask them, tell me your story. And I heard phenomenal stories from people. And within 2 to 3 minutes, you know, we weren't strangers any longer. And I saw a richness in them start to develop posturally with them. I saw them developing a little bit more courage of expressing their story more in depth. It was wonderful. And like we said earlier, stepping out of my comfort zone, leaping over that ledge, magic. Because when I asked that question, I knew it was a matter of time before the magic, boom, came off and everything was over. And the whole thing just became so much easier with that particular individual. So I love the mindset concept also, and helping people understand their particular mindsets and freeing them from it.
I love that too. And I've been doing a lot of work with habits because people are always trying to change their, let's set new habits and those things and willpower. You know, I work with a lot of athletes, so they're always trying to, you know, eat better and do these things and use their willpower. So I've been doing a lot of work with this, and the conclusion I'm coming to is I don't believe the willpower is such a big thing, or even the habits. I think it's our beliefs. For example, I have beliefs around red lights. It doesn't take any willpower for me to not run a red light. I have this belief that there might be a cop sitting over there in the dark and he is ready to pull me over and I can't see him. I have this belief that the second I do, some car is going to come barreling through and smash into me. I have these beliefs. Yep. I don't have to work at sitting at that red light and waiting.
Correct.
But in other ways, I'm struggling. I'm using my willpower. So then I've been working with people on bringing up their beliefs around that thing. So if you're struggling that much, it's not your habits. It's what you believe about it. And they say, okay, well, I know, you know, yeah, I'm eating, you know, 5 candy bars every day. And I know that's not good for me. But I just need to have more willpower. I'm like, you know, it's not good for you, but there's some other belief there as well about that candy bar that's keeping you from changing those habits. You have another belief. Yeah. What is that belief? So we start drilling into beliefs. And the second their beliefs change, it's incredible that the habits change as well. So changing habits, you know, it's so many days, it's so many hours to do habits. I don't believe that at all. I think that's instantaneous the second you change your belief. The thing is changing that belief.
I love it. Simplicity.
Simplicity.
Simplicity. Sri, I've read a number of books on habits, establishing them and changing them. And yes, you need to practice this 4 times a day for 31 days in a row, and then it becomes a minimal habit. So you need to keep that going. That's far too much work for people. They're going to give up before then. Make it simpler. Make it simpler. And again, that's part of the message of my podcast is keep life as simple as possible. Make your efforts as simple. That's the way if we were to just let our body be, that's the way our body functions, in the simplest, easiest fashion possible. Why can't we let our minds do the same and our interactions with people? It's not difficult. Not difficult. I've loved this. So Rhea, I'm going to put you on the spot. Share one or two things that you think are absolutely necessities for them to remember from what we've talked about today moving forward.
So I think two phrases, I think if people could take from this, one would be burn it all down. Anytime you find yourself frustrated in a situation or you know things aren't working, literally burn everything down to the ground that you know, and that includes the people around you, burn them down too. Now you can add people back in when you start building things up again, but everybody has to go. And I include the most important people in your life in that. I burn my children down and my husband. Please don't take that out of context. I'm going to get a lot of hate. but I have to start with me and nothing else. And then as I know what's going on and build it back up, then I place things back where they belong, but burn it all down. And then the other thing would be your critical question, forming your critical question. Will it help me beat the Reaper? Whatever your Reaper is, whatever critical, and it can be a very short-term question. If you've got to leave at 10 o'clock and you're scrolling through your phone, will this help me leave at 10 o'clock? You know, simple short-term questions, bigger long-term questions, and then just my general life driver, which is, will it help me beat the Reaper?
Yeah. I like both of those a lot. And if people think that they can't burn it down, just go back and reflect upon the first couple of months when we were in shutdown during COVID. Did you ever think in your life prior to that, that you could shut down for a number of months, even up to a year plus, minimalize your friendships and your exposure to the people that have been in your life in the past, and realizing that simple's pretty good, and how much pressure, less pressure we felt upon ourselves by burning down the irrelevancy and things in our life that we really don't need. I like that. We can do that.
We not only can, but we have to if we're not going to race to the bottom with everybody else.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a question. You have to do it. The only question is, when should yesterday be the time that you do it? Like now.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And developing the critical question. I think that's a really good one. When you have a critical question that you can throw out at yourself immediately when you're challenged or put before something that, again, brings about a question on which direction to go. You've got your critical question to help navigate you through that, just like the 340.
Absolutely. And, you know, I teach a lot of people a lot more nuanced things, and we go very, very deep, but that's a really great place to start. And just keeping in mind, when you die, you don't want to meet the person you could have become. That's a horrible thought in my mind.
Isn't that? That's a great thought. I'm glad you brought that up, because it, you know, when we step out of that comfort zone and we start asking relevant questions of ourselves that really push us in a direction, we grow into someone that we never ever envisioned. And what a wonderful thing. Because that new person can go out there and really make a dent in the universe. Taking a phrase from Steve Jobs, go make your dent in the universe. Use the two elements here that Saria talked about, is burn it all down, start over, and find your critical question to help navigate you in times where you need some navigation. Saria, thank you so much for being with us today. I love your information. I love your energy. I've got to be around you at some point in time. Hopefully our paths will cross. I'm gonna stalk you on LinkedIn and see what you're doing and where you're doing it. Maybe I should get my ballerina outfit or gymnastics outfit and come to St. Louis and let you teach me. I've lost a little flexibility in my body here over the last number of years, and I'm looking at ways I can regain that flexibility to help my golf game.
Oh, so, I'll have you work with my contortionists.
Yeah, please do. Maybe going minimalist with my golf shoes too will help me, so you never know. But thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. You're just a great person, and I love what you're doing for people and humanity, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. This is Dr. John, and this is this episode of Fearless Dentistry. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.